and welcome to Transforming Together. I'm Heidi.
I'm Brittany.
And we are here from Hope Works of Howard County.
Hope Works is Howard County's domestic violence and sexual violence response center or crisis center. Heidi and I are the resident radicals, as some might say.
Yeah, we are.
And Hope Works is considered a comprehensive service agency. We provide various services, including residential, legal, and advocacy. And then, of course, Heidi and I are a part of the community engagement department, which does more outreach, education, and prevention work.
And so part of that's going to be this podcast. Welcome to our first episode. So what we want to do here is really take some time to talk with you in the community about some of the root causes of violence, because we think one of the most important parts of prevention is bringing these issues that are really hard to talk about, like why abuse happens, what makes a relationship unhealthy or not, consent, which can be really hard to talk about. We need to bring those out of the silence and start talking about them. And also recognizing that this is a process, which is why our podcast is called Transforming Together, because Brittany and I don't have all the answers. We don't have the automatic solutions to tell you, but we want to dig into the nitty gritty together.
Mm-hmm. And that highlights the fact that this is also a process for us, and that we are in the midst of unlearning really unhealthy things, unlearning things that we were socialized to believe, biases that we inherited, making it very plain that this is not an us versus them or something that's outside of us. This is very much a community process and a shared process that we're engaging in together. And I think the podcast is also going to really look at those intersections between experiences. So maybe experiencing partner violence as it relates to racism or classism and those different intersectional experiences.
And part of those are manifested in us as your hosts. Yeah. So, Brittany, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, my name is Brittany. I am from Hawaii. Originally, I've been in Maryland working in Howard County for just over 2 years. I'm an auntie. I'm a daughter and I'm a friend. And I'm Kanaka Maoli, or Native Hawaiian, which is, you know, really important to me and my sense of identity and culture and community. And I'm also a cisgender fluid woman who is trying to understand my privilege amongst the issues that we dive into and how I can best serve the community and the movements that I care about. What about you, Heidi?
I'm Heidi, and I identify as a queer, cis, white woman who is working to challenge white supremacy, both that I've internalized and in the outside world at large. I'm an intersectional feminist. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I moved to Howard County almost a year ago, and I'm getting used to knowing this area, enjoying that. And I love nerd culture, baking for my coworkers, and my cat, Mia, who is here in spirit.
We love your baking for your coworkers as well. So we're just going to dive right in. Today is Valentine's Day.
You probably won't be listening to it on Valentine's Day, but that's where we're at. And yeah, we want to tackle some of those issues. So
we can start with the obvious. I mean, there's the clear commercialization and capitalist kind of argument to be made around Valentine's Day.
Right. So we have some mixed feelings about it, right? Like I love the idea of celebrating love, and I'm really passionate about celebrating my love for my friends, family, and when I have a partner in my life, great too. But there's also some things that we want to challenge about how Valentine's Day can actually reinforce some of these unhealthy relationship norms in the community, like including those things like the capitalism and you have to give gifts on Valentine's Day and it has to be a grand gesture. Mm-hmm. And also it's really just this one day that it's normalized and accepted to do these types of things. Another thing that we find kind of problematic about Valentine's Day is just the oversaturation of images in the media, online, magazines, everywhere, of a very specific type of romance and what romance and relationships should look like. And it's usually very heterosexual, very often white and wealthy, and again, focused on that idea of gift giving as the primary way of showing your love, also with marriage as the pinnacle of what a relationship should be. And oftentimes it can be unhealthy things that are being portrayed as well that are shown as normalized as part of this promotion of Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with limiting it to this display of affection is that you have caretaking being limited to specific or sporadic expressions of love rather than an ongoing, everyday, embodied practice that couples or people in relationships should be institutionalizing and normalizing within the duration and the course of their relationship.
And it's kind of can be used in that way, I think, as a day to kind of make up for or cover up mm-hmm. other relationship problems. It's like, well, we're just going to get through Valentine's Day and it's going to be this beautiful day that reminds us why we love each other. But are you using that to cover up some ways that you maybe aren't being healthy?
It's a cop out for doing the work.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
And as we mentioned in the introduction, we're not immune to any of this stuff that's going on.
And I mean, every relationship is different. There are certainly relationships where Valentine's Day can be a beautiful expression of the care and compassion and love that is already within the relationship. And what works for one relationship might not work for another. Definitely recognizing that some couples are able to engage the holiday differently, but just that in general, a lot of the media representation has created some pretty unhealthy relationship expectations, which we wanted to dive into a little bit more.
So Brittany, how has some of that stuff shown up for you? And we've talked about it a bit, but I want to hear more.
I think what I internalized growing up and have been working hard to unlearn as my awareness increases and expands is that love, this idea that love is supposed to hurt or that it's supposed to be painful. You know, I really think I internalized that from music that I was listening to, really angsty, sad love songs.
Everybody hurts.
Exactly. Right. I'm glad that, thank you for that. And then kind of in addition to that, the idea that you're supposed to fight to make love work. I see that a lot on like social media, people comparing relationships now to relationships of the past where, you know, no one works to make things work anymore. No one fights for their love and everyone gives up so easily. And I think that's a really antiquated way of thinking. And I think it's harmful to suggest that we work ourselves to the point of self-sacrifice in order to make a relationship work. I think kids are growing up with this idea that to love someone is to think that you want to die without them. And so then when something ends, we don't know what to do with ourselves. And I think media plays a really big role in reinforcing those ideas.
Yeah, and I think that can be a part of a self-imposed shame. If something in the relationship is going horribly wrong, but you believe, no, if it's love, I'm going to fight for it. Yeah. I'm going to stick it out because that's what love is. And that can be a way for yourself to be protecting yourself from some of the harmful stuff that's going on.
Yeah. And then we internalize that as like, well, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that this relationship isn't working? What's wrong with us that we can't do this? And sometimes it's not us. It's not me. It's just the circumstances aren't right or where we're at in our life isn't right.
Or it could be a relationship that's unhealthy or actually abusive, which is what we're dealing with at HopeWorks, is taking that further.
Yeah. What about you, Heidi? What have you experienced or learned?
All of that stuff plus some. I think one of the things that's really stuck out to me is the idea that if love is real love, that there wouldn't be any sort of boundaries. You would share everything from every single thought crossing your mind to passwords to your money to everything. And sharing can be a really, you know, healthy, strong, powerful thing in a relationship. It comes with trust, but there's also a sense, there's also, you have to have those boundaries that make you comfortable and that make you feel like you're still your own person in a relationship. And I think that extends more than just, you know, sharing your thoughts and your opinions. It's also sharing your time. If you love someone, you're going to spend every single hour of every single day with them. And you can kind of get to a place in a relationship, and this kind of becomes a trope in the media, right, where you're not a you anymore, it's a we. So we'll be there. And it's this always a couple where you're always joined at the hip, and that's shown as being like the most desirable way to be in a relationship. But I think that something that I'm learning more for myself as I have relationships is that taking time to say, no, this is what I need for me. I know that I need, I'm an ambivert, right? I'm an introvert and an extrovert. And if I don't have time by myself to just sit on my couch with my cat and not interact with other humans, then I'm not going to be able to engage with other people mm-hmm. as my best self. And simultaneously, I need to be with others, but it's about finding that balance mm-hmm. and having a partner that will respect that. And then it also, you know, branches out to things like sharing passwords and sharing other resources, which in an unhealthy or abusive relationship can be manipulated. But just the idea that you can have things that are private, and it doesn't mean, or have time to yourself, and it doesn't mean that you don't trust mm-hmm. the other person or that you don't love them. It's just about, how can I take care of myself? How do I need to take care of myself? And with a partner who loves you, they'll respect that and want you to take the best possible care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I think kind of jumping right off of that is an idea throughout the media that women especially should never be too much, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. You don't want to come off as being too needy or being needing too much emotional labor from your partner or needing too much, making too many mm-hmm. demands for what you need for yourself.
Expectations,
yeah. Setting those boundaries. And I think that sometimes I've seen in myself, even with friendships, like not wanting to send too many texts or mm-hmm. or share of myself if I'm feeling bad or feeling down because I don't want to feel like a burden to them or I don't mm-hmm. want to come on too strong. Mm-hmm. But really, you need to feel safe in a relationship, whether it's a friendship or a romantic partnership, to be willing to give of yourself and expect the other person to do so as well. And that comes with vulnerability and creating trust. And it can be really hard and scary to put yourself out like that. But if you're constantly being guarded and worried about overwhelming them with who you are mm-hmm. as a person, then you're never being your full self
yeah.
as a person.
Yeah. I won't go too much into that, but I that just makes me think about all of the ways that I was trying to fit myself into what would work for other people. Mm. And really just within the last couple of years being the only time where I've really prioritized what my needs and expectations are, and that it's okay for a relationship to come after those things.
And I think sometimes in the media that can be portrayed as being selfish, mm-hmm. but I think it's inherently not. I think it's inherently yeah. necessary.
I mean, we could have a whole other conversation
yes, we
can. On
You're
that.
Right.
I won't go that way, but selfish is something that has just been really like misappropriated by the world at large.
Absolutely.
And then just to wrap up that, I would say the idea that love is enough. I think it goes back to that idea of fighting really hard to make things work, trying to put a square peg in a wooden hole. Love is not always enough, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful, but if you love someone and there's not other things missing, like trust or communication or clear expression of expectations and needs and desires, it's okay to say this isn't working anymore. It's okay to admit that love is not enough. And I think I didn't learn that until later on, and definitely the hard way. Heidi, you wanted to mention something really quickly about queer representation as it pertains to the conversation we're having.
Right. So thing is, with Valentine's Day, maybe a little bit more in commercials, for example, being a primary expression of what you're seeing Valentine's Day in. There's maybe a little bit more queer couples now and then, but it's primarily going to be like white gay men mm-hmm. for the most part. And you're seeing primarily romances being depicted as inherently heterosexual, or even if it's an LGBT relationship, as being something that's focused on marriage as being the end game or goal. And I kind of feel like this lack of representation has both a light side and a shadow side mm-hmm. to it. And I feel like the shadow side is pretty obvious. Lack of representation is really frustrating. And as a young, like, burgeoning queer person in middle school, I was just desperate. You know, I read every single book in the St. Louis County Library that had to do with young adult LGBT representation. And so that's not there. And that's kind of a shadow for sure. But on the flip side, kind of a light side of that challenging thing is that lots of the expectations that are placed on heterosexual relationships, which are so clearly represented in the media, aren't always there for LGBT relationships. So you're able to kind of co-create something freed from those constraints and kind of decide for yourself what you want a relationship to look like without those inherently toxic. And you can still internalize those toxic things, mm-hmm. but it's not quite as heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. So that's something I think about a lot.
Yeah, there's definitely more wiggle room, and I appreciate you mentioning that. Recognizing that representation is an issue, recognizing that we need to challenge harmful or problematic ideas, Heidi and I still both really love the Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls. We are Gillies, you might say.
Yeah. It's definitely heteronormative. It's definitely white normative. And it has some issues in terms of casting and production and writing and things like that. But it also is a really good place for us to have some conversation around what unhealthy and healthy relationships look like. And Heidi and I both admittedly love the show.
And so, we could have a whole podcast probably about the show. Yeah. We're not going to try to do that.
But just to make some connections with the folks who might know the show and are familiar with similar representations, we wanted to dive a little bit into some of the relationships there.
So pause real quick. I'm going to let you know, for people who haven't seen the show, just a very basic overview of what it's about. I'm not going to assume that people know. It's primarily a show about a mother and daughter, Lorelai and Rory, and their relationship. But they both have several romantic relationships kind of on the side. But it's primarily about that small town mother-daughter. And we're going to look a little bit at two of their different romantic relationships that they have. That's what we're working with.
And Rory, her goal throughout the entire run of the series is to get into, the first half of the series is to get into Harvard. And that is a really important thing about her character, is how driven she is and how ambitious she is and how focused she is on her goals. So when she meets Dean, who is her first boyfriend, he's definitely the protector, kind of sweeps her off her feet with his intelligence and maybe some of his broodingness, but
you're thinking of Jess. Dean isn't super intelligent and brooding. Dean's kind of dumb.
Well, I think Dean meets her over, don't they connect over books in the beginning?
That's true, but then they made him stupid when Jess came. That's a side note. Regardless.
It's definitely a relationship that is romanticized, and there's a lot of nostalgia surrounding Rory's first love. And you see that later on when she starts dating Jess, and there's this comparison between what Jess means to her and what Dean meant to her. And I found that relationship to be alarming, actually.
There's a lot of unhealthy behavior going on.
Yeah.
I think part of it, one of the first big things that I see, is that Dean is an extremely insecure boyfriend frequently. He has a lot of jealousy that gets directed at Rory when other boys in her life are interacting with her. There's this boy at her private school, Tristan, who she has no interest in and who's very clearly interested in her in a kind of high school bullying type way. But he's definitely interested in her. And Dean is very protective and angry about that. I remember he kicks a duffel bag at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Tristan, and the aggression that he lets out through that. It's kind of portrayed in the show as being like, oh, he loves Rory about her so much. He cares about her so deeply.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be seeing that kind of jealousy and aggression in a relationship.
Yeah. For us in the work that we do, that is a red flag. And I think for me, more than his jealousy over Jess and Tristan, it was his jealousy around Rory's school priorities.
Yes.
And I mean, at some point he apologizes for it, but there's this initial reaction to Rory's extracurricular activities getting in the way of the time that they're able to spend together. The bigger trigger for me, though, was when he got upset when Rory wasn't ready to say, I love you. And they were maybe three or 6 months into their relationship. And for whatever reason, it ends up being related to some of her family issues. But Rory is not ready to say, I love you. And they actually end up breaking up over that incident. And for me, I was just like, no, that is absolutely not okay.
Right. That's her boundary to set. That's her emotional readiness. I also think that part of that scenario was he had taken her to a junkyard, which sounds kind of shady, but he was trying to tell her that he had bought this car that he was going to rebuild for her. He was going to make her a car. So he had this grand love gesture. Mm-hmm. And what the narrative says, right, is if you make grand romantic gestures, that's supposed to lead to some sort of reciprocity. In his case, he was expecting a payoff that she would say, I love you back right away. And that tie into that grand gesture is, I think, part of even more what set him off in that instance.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the general idea behind Rory and Dean is that people root for them out of this sense of nostalgia, and not not actually because they're compatible, which I think is just a very common theme that we see not only in media, but in the relationships that we witness around us. And it's in our parents' marriages. It's in our friends' relationships. It's in our extended family relationships where, you know, we all have that family member where we know they're married or they're in their marriage because at this point it's convenient or because they're replaying that story of how they started and how they fell in love. And we're not really dealing with people in the present moment, or we're not dealing with people as their full selves.
And I think that plays out with Rory later in the show when she ends up losing her virginity to Dean, who at that point is married to someone else. And it's very predicated on her nostalgia for what they used to be together and not really acknowledging the situation of where either of them are in their lives. And we could get into that in a whole different way. But I think you're absolutely right about that concept of nostalgia and not being present with a person fully and kind of falling back into some toxic patterns.
What about Lorelai and Luke? Can you say more about them?
Lorelai and Luke, Lukelai, as the internet forums kind of horribly call them, I think, they're like the idolized couple in all of Gilmore Girls, right? So Lorelai is Rory's mom, and Luke is the kind of grumpy but good-hearted diner guy who she has a will-they-won't-they for several seasons until they finally get together, and they're portrayed as like the pinnacle of what a relationship should be. And I think that for the original run of the series, we're going to get into spoilers for the revival later, but not yet. For the original run, they have some really healthy, consistent moments where they are really good for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that comes from the fact that they've known each other for so long and they reliably show up for one another.
Yeah.
Especially Luke often does that through grand gestures, but coming backed up with things that he knows about Lorelai or about their relationship and without a need for reciprocity or repay for that grand gesture. Even just things like lending Lorelai his truck to move Rory into college or the grand romantic gestures like making her an ice skating rink in her backyard.
Yeah.
Things that are consistently, but based in what he knows Lorelai will like and appreciate and showing up for her in a way to bring her joy rather than to bring him.
Yeah.
Sex or payback or something like that. It's about care.
And he's definitely reliable and consistent in the way that, you know, aside from the grand gestures, he goes there and makes repairs. He takes
care of the house.
He makes sure that things are running properly when it's winter. The seasons are very big in that show, but he definitely just consistently shows up for her in really meaningful ways. And then I think there's the fact that their relationship is built on friendship. You know, when the show starts, they've been friends for 10 years at that point. And they have this really strong, solid foundation before they move beyond that. And for me, what I enjoy about them is that you never have any doubt of how they feel for the other person. I think that is something that's important to think about in our own interpersonal relationships, because a lot of us walk around with doubt and insecurity, and then we project that onto our partners or we deny those experiences that we're having, and we ignore our intuitions when it, you know, is actually our internal alarm systems trying to look out for us. So they really show up very strong throughout the original series, and then there's the revival. So just to make sure that Heidi and I are being consistent with our values, we do have to point out that
spoiler alert.
Yeah. In the revival, it's 8 years later, and they are essentially in the same place and dealing with a lot of the same issues that they had throughout the original series. And that's when we're like, I wouldn't want to emulate this couple so much.
Right. Because when we first see them in the first couple seasons or the first couple seasons of the show, when they are together, we do see these really positive things. But like all couples who are working out a relationship, they have some communication issues. And what we're seeing is that 8 years later, those things haven't changed. Communication is at the heart of it. Like, we see that in 8 years of a relationship, they haven't talked once, or more than eight at that point, like 10 years in a relationship, they haven't talked once about whether the other wants to have kids. And then that becomes an issue really late in the game for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have issues with sharing each other's family problems with one another, having certain parts of their lives that are kind of closed off to each other.
Being emotionally available for one another.
Or unavailable, rather.
Unavailable, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it's brings us back to romanticizing
a love or a romance because of nostalgia and because of this idea of the love story and what it was beforehand.
So we still love Luke and Lorelai, but we really wish they hadn't gotten stuck in these unhealthy habits.
Yeah. So we're kind of coming close to the end of our time together. I'm wondering, Heidi, if you can bring it back to maybe like a couple of final thoughts on what you think in terms of healthy and unhealthy relationships, and maybe even some connections to the relationships in Gilmore Girls that we were mentioning.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most important things for me that I take home when we're thinking about relationships is that healthy relationships are two individual people together. They're not some people that are joined at the hip, and they have to have separate lives, passions, and friendships outside of the relationship to fully enjoy and take care of one another and live their lives as an individual. In Gilmore Girls, we see that with Luke and Lorelai, right? So Luke is willing to go to Miss Patty's dance shows with Lorelai, even though that's definitely not his thing, because he enjoys engaging with her and watching her have fun and do her thing. And when they've been in a relationship for a long time and Luke hasn't done camping in several months, which is something he loves, Lorelai says, no, make sure you're doing this. I want you to take care of yourself and the things that you love doing, because that's part of you. And I love you for all the things that you enjoy doing. So please take care of yourself. So I think that healthy relationships are about having those balanced lives together and separately, and feeling joyful for our partner when they're doing things that make them happy, even if it's not with us all the time. Mm-hmm. And also simultaneously, that romantic relationships are not the pinnacle of our existence. Those other things do matter. And being with someone or not being with someone is not the end all be all of whether you're going to be happy and have a successful life. And I think Lorelai does a good job throughout the show of, even when she's not with someone in a relationship, that doesn't mean that she's a sad, lonely person. She's got a lot of stuff going on. And she also has a lot of strong, well, at least one strong female friendship with her friend Suki. And I want to shout out to Galentine's Day as a concept, which I had a Galentine's with some of my girls last night.
Awesome.
And enjoying female friendships and celebrating relationships that aren't just romantic.
Absolutely.
How about you, Brittany?
I think the last thing for me is just this idea of transitions, and that relationships do end, and that there's a life cycle to things. I wish I had known that. And I think that it's not normalized in our culture to recognize that it's okay to end relationships. It's okay to outgrow relationships, whether they're romantic or platonic, or even familial in times, like that you get to prioritize taking care of yourself, and you get to prioritize your healing, and you get to prioritize your well-being. And that is absolutely okay. And I just want to thank you, Heidi. I want to say happy Valentine's Day to you, and honor the working relationship that has blossomed into a friendship that you and I have, and the support that you offer me in the work that we do together. And I just really appreciate you.
I appreciate you so hard, Brittany. Happy Valentine's Day. I am so grateful to have you in my life. And I love that we're working together to emulate what we believe in, which is normalizing expressions of care and love in friendships. And you can do that in friendships. I want to tell my friends that I love them, and I love you, and I love having
and
you.
And working relationships.
In my life. And working relationships. We're awesome at both. Yes. Crushing it.
Yeah.
Yes. So I would like to remind our listeners to be willing to step up and show care to everyone in your life, and to normalize that vulnerability and sharing of love.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better. And intuition saves lives. Trust your gut. Trust the feelings that you have about people, and trust yourself, ultimately.
So that's it for us from us. Yeah. And we will talk to you next month. Thank you so much. Yep. That's our first step. Woohoo!